The Full 60 is brought to you by Game Time, your new go-to app for the best deals on last-minute tickets. Did you know NHL ticket prices tend to drop right before the game starts? Game Time tracks prices in real time from thousands of trusted sellers, then shows you all the best last-minute deals with prices up to 60% off. More than 12 million fans have downloaded the Game Time app and discovered the fastest, easiest way to get into the game. And the beauty of Game Time is it's not just sporting events that you can get tickets to. They have concerts, they have plays, they have, right now I was looking, they have tickets to something called Jurassic World Live, which sounds pretty great for someone who has an 11-year-old son who would probably love to see like dinosaurs attacking people, which I just have to assume that's what that is. It's at Little Caesars Arena coming up in a few days. $27 to go see that on Game Time right now. And it's all done with their super easy two-tap checkout. Two taps gets you what you need there. So head to the App Store or Play Store now to download Game Time and score awesome deals on last-minute tickets.
Welcome to The Full 60 featuring Craig Custance and presented by The Athletic. Each week, we'll dive into the biggest stories in hockey while bringing in unique voices to entertain and explain all aspects of the game.
Hey, this is Craig, and welcome to this week's episode of The Full 60. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, you know one of my favorite questions to ask is what people are reading. Mostly because I just want to steal ideas and then go get those books or add them to my Goodreads want list. And that question ended up leading to a story I recently did for The Athletic. I hope you saw it, where I asked well over 100 people in hockey to list or to share the best book they've read in the last year and why. And it led to some fascinating answers from Gary Bettman, Don Fehr, Sidney Crosby, you know, some of the biggest names, people in kind of all walks of life in hockey. And it was a lot of fun to do for selfish reasons because it really gave me some great ideas on books to read. But also something interesting happened when I was asking people. An author kept coming up, and that author was Ryan Holiday. And multiple people in hockey mentioned Ryan Holiday books, not just the same book. It was various books written by Ryan. For instance, Greg Powers, who was on this podcast, he's the Arizona State hockey coach who launched that hockey program, listed The Obstacle is the Way and has said in the past, like, this is a book that has been influential in building that program. I mean, they have a lot of obstacles to building hockey in the desert. And it's worked out great there. And he credits some of the concepts in that book. Brian McClellan, the Washington Capitals GM, Stanley Cup winner, also listed The Obstacle is the Way. Bob McKenzie, who you all know, TSN insider, not only did he list a Ryan Holiday book, he listed a book that he hadn't even read yet. And he said Stillness is the Key, which came out, I want to say, in October by Ryan Holiday. He said he can't wait to read it. He has so much faith in Ryan's books that he knows it'll be the best thing he's going to read. And so I'm like, I wonder if Ryan realizes the impact he's having on the hockey world and, you know, on the sporting landscape at large. And Ryan's a busy guy. Like, this isn't a guy that's doing a ton of interviews. I mean, he's got a lot going on. And was with help from producer Tyler Hunt, we were able to nail down a time and get him after he just returned from a trip to Europe, get him on the podcast. But before we get to that conversation with Ryan, and I'm excited about it for a lot of reasons, you know, I think primarily because I'm also a writer, and anytime you can pick the brain of somebody as successful as Ryan, it's an incredible opportunity. But before we get to that, I wanted to share Sam Gagne, the Edmonton Oilers forward, listed Ryan Holiday's book, The Obstacle is the Way, as the best book he read. And I wanted you to listen to Sam's answer. I taped it, and I apologize. This was a dressing room interview, but it gives you a hint of why people in hockey like these books so much. So before we get to the conversation with Ryan, let's listen to Sam Gagne explain why he loved that book so much.
The Obstacle is the Way.
Oh, it is. Okay, yeah. Good. The Ryan Holiday book?
Yeah.
What did you like about it?
I thought it was... just the real life examples that he showed of people turning what seemed to be obstacles into kind of springboards for their success. You know, I thought a lot of the stories were really interesting, and you know, I think some of the self-help books you read or whatever, like that genre, if you want to call it that, I don't think, you know, I think the real life examples of you know, and in past history and of Stoicism, I just thought it was really interesting. And you know, I find myself in some of the challenges I go through in my life referencing that book a lot, and it comes up a lot. So it's you know, all his books, actually, I've read them all. They're really interesting, and it's a great way of putting the stories together.
So before we get to the interview with Ryan, because this is such a unique, this is kind of a outside of the world of hockey conversation, I want to give you a really quick background on Ryan. He's an author who has taken kind of these ancient Stoic philosophies and kind of brought them into modern thinking and how we can apply them to everyday life. And clearly it's making its impact on the hockey world because so many people in the hockey community are sharing these books. He's speaking to different sports teams. I think the New England Patriots were one of the first, and he mentions that and tells that story about the book being passed around that locker room, and it's now happening in hockey. And while he hasn't spoken to any NHL teams in person, I'm sure that is just a matter of time. So his books that are along these lines are most recently Stillness is the Key. He's also written Ego is the Enemy. The Obstacle is the Way, and also The Daily Stoic, which Sharks broadcaster Jamie Baker highlighted as one of his favorite reads and something that he is constantly referring to in his life. And so before that, Ryan Holiday wrote, when we get into this a little bit, he wrote a book, Trust Me, I'm Lying, Confessions of a Media Manipulator. So it's an interesting transition from somebody that openly talked about how he manipulated mass media to his benefit, and has now transitioned into somebody who really is taking on these kind of ancient philosophies and writing them in a way that is appealing to mass audiences. So a lot of ground to cover, not necessarily a hockey conversation, but essentially it is, because it's making its impact in the hockey world. And I think there's a lot we can apply from this conversation. So I'm really excited to bring this interview to you, to expose you to some of his thoughts, and just to give you access to somebody who is clearly making an impact in the world that we care about, in the hockey corner of the Athletic universe. So here it is, the Full 60 conversation with author Ryan Holiday. All right. Well, then let's dive right in. And yeah. I wanted to have you on, as I said in the message, because, you know, I did this basically, I asked 100 people in hockey what the best book they've read in the last year. And sure. it essentially became this Ryan Holiday fest. And I'm not sure I saw that coming, to be honest. Not, you know,
my publisher did not see it coming either. When I first wanted to write books about ancient philosophy,
that's right. Like, did you have any indication or like hint that this would become such a phenomenon in sports?
Not really. I mean, look, it is interesting. One of the very early Stoics was basically an Olympic level long distance runner, and you know, the Stoics were into wrestling and boxing and things like that. But when I was writing the books, I was primarily thinking about business because there is sort of a history of kind of like, you know, CEOs read The Art of War and The Prince and mm-hmm. The 48 Laws of Power and books like that. So I was kind of thinking of that, but the sports thing was a surprise. What ended up happening was, someone who worked in the front office for the New England Patriots, Mike Lombardi, read The Obstacle is the Way when it came out, and he sort of kicked off the whole thing. I mean, there's some other people, Andy McKay, who's a performance coach for a bunch of different baseball teams, sort of was an early person, but it kind of bounced around a bunch of different leagues, and then over the last couple of years, it's just been sort of a word of mouth thing.
Right. And so I saw, like, you now speak to sports franchises. So I got to ask first, because this is a large hockey audience, have you done any NHL teams? Have you spoken to any NHL teams?
I've never spoken to an NHL team. I've heard from a lot of different players and coaches and sort of people in the hockey world, but for whatever reason, that is I think the one that I haven't spoken to.
That's funny. So I saw a clip when I was kind of just doing some research for this of you talking to the Cleveland Browns fairly recently.
Yeah.
It looked like what? So when you go in and you're talking to a team of athletes and you're referring stuff that's thousands of years old, like what's the approach there to make sure there's a connection?
Well, actually, I got advice from another author who I'm sure was on your list, John Gordon. Mm-hmm. And John was saying, he's like, look, these are very busy people. They have all day is them sitting there and people throwing stuff at them that they have to memorize. So he's like, look, if you can give them one or two things that they can use in the course of a season, you've sort of done your job. And so, yeah, talking to coaches and players is a different thing. What I sort of focus on is I go like, okay, I'm a nerd about philosophy. I'm fascinated with this. I totally get that you aren't. Let me give you like, here are like five things boiled down to their absolute essence that I think you might be able to remember when you're bone ass tired, when, you know, people are criticizing you or that you can remember, you know, right before, you know, you're about to sort of, you know, play the game of your life. Like what are the things that have stood the test of time as far as like, you know, insights of the human species. What can I give you? And that's sort of what I think about.
So the clip I saw, it was essentially control the things you can control, which I hear a lot from athletes, right? Like that's, is that one of the kind of the go-tos on that front?
Yeah. What I was talking about there. So in Stoicism, there is this exercise, it's called the dichotomy of control. And it's really sort of breaking things down into two categories, what's up to you and what's not up to you. And basically, your thoughts, your opinions, your actions, these are up to you. The mm-hmm. results of those actions, other people's opinions, what other people say, what other people do, none of that is up to you. And so, you know, it's certainly a thing athletes would have grown up hearing their whole life, like, you know, focus on what you control,
right,
you know.
Right.
But I think there's something powerful in realizing, like, oh, this isn't something that your coach just made up to shut you up, right? Or, you know, this isn't just a thing that's really easy for someone on the sidelines to say, but doesn't actually mean. What I'm trying to say is like, hey, look, you know, Marcus Aurelius came up with this 2,000 years ago, or Epictetus, who was a former slave, he's talking about this, and he's talking about it in situations that are even, that are much higher stakes than the sort of cushy world that we all live in.
Yeah.
And so kind of what I try to do in my writing and in my speeches is just illustrate these ideas in stories that are likely to stick with someone. Because again, I nerd out that, oh, this is Marcus Aurelius and this is what they were doing in ancient Greece or ancient Rome.
Yeah.
But you know, if I'm an athlete and I'm just listening to an audiobook before I fall asleep on a plane, like that's a different context.
So it's funny you mentioned. So one of the players mentioned Meditations as the book, the best book they've read, and I'm sitting there going, "This
wow.
is a book that was written in 170 A.D." And
uh-huh.
here is a hockey player saying, "Yeah, that's the one that spoke to the most." And I'm sure it was a result of, you know, on some level probably your work. I have to imagine.
I mean, I would be very flattered if that's the case. I mean, I just got back from. I was in Budapest last week. I was giving a talk. And Marcus Aurelius actually writes a large chunk of Meditations in Budapest. Mm-hmm. Like you don't think the Roman Empire, Hungary, but that's as big as it was, and it was incredible. You know, you can walk through these Roman ruins, and walk the streets where this guy wrote this book 2,000 years ago, and you can, you know, it's. You realize, like, people are people, and experiences are experiences, and the journaling done in, you know, the morning or the evening by a guy who was wealthy and powerful and stressed and ambitious, and, you know, had stuff to do and was surrounded by difficult people and you know, had all these conflicting urges and desires, like, you realize, like, oh, he's not that different than us, that we're all kind of doing the same thing. And I think at the core of philosophy is just an exploration of the sort of the struggles of the human condition.
Was your trip to go to experience that firsthand, or was it speaking engagements, or what was kind of the motivation for that trip?
I was giving a talk in Budapest, and I went up to go see this stuff. And I mean, like, it was crazy. Like, I went to this sort of bathhouse, and you can get in a hot spring that's like the same hot spring that the Romans were using 2,000 years ago. So, like, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And that's what I think is even interesting about, you know, the Stoics and sports. It's like, I walked out onto the field of a Roman amphitheater, where they were waging athletic contests 2,000 years ago. And it's like, you walk up the stairs, you walk through a tunnel, and then you're on a field and you're surrounded by people. Like, it's nothing has changed, right? Like, the only thing that has changed is that you can't literally kill your opponent anymore, right? Like, whatever an NHL player would be experiencing, from the roar of a crowd and the thrill of competition and the drive to compete and win, like, has not changed from, you know, the races that Chrysippus was running, you know, in Athens in, you know, 100 BC.
When did you start getting into all of this? Like, what drives that passion for you?
I was in college and I was studying philosophy, but I went to this conference and sort of like you were doing, where you're asking people what they were reading. Yeah. I was at this conference and Dr. Drew was there. Do you know who Dr. Drew is?
Oh yeah, yeah, like the Dr. Drew. And Adam and all that.
So I was like, hey, like, you're really smart. What books are you reading? And he was like, oh, I'm reading, you know, this book by this Greek slave, Epictetus. And I went back to my hotel room and I bought that. And then Marcus Aurelius was recommended also, and I bought that because I'd seen the movie Gladiator. And that was it.
That's amazing. And
yeah, it was crazy.
And you dropped out, right? Like, you.
I did. Like, yeah, yeah. I
mean, how far after that? Do we blame the Stoics?
No. I would never do such a thing. About a year later, I got a chance to be a research assistant for a writer. So I actually kind of talk about that when I talk about sports teams. I sort of say, like, you know, I was sort of a two and done player. Although the economics of going pro as a writer are, you know, considerably less exciting than going from college to the pros in basically any professional sport.
Yeah, no, right. I don't. Yeah, two and done into the writing world is a risky proposition.
And then just, you know, what you get paid is, you know, 10 years earnings is like a rookie signing bonus in the NFL.
But what I think people can pull from your experience in kind of this world, in the NHL and the athletic world, is, so you, my understanding, and you can tell the story, but is it was to learn from somebody else, right? It was to go to apprentice another writer.
Yeah, I mean, I basically was like, oh, if I want to be a writer, why am I learning about writing from teachers? I should be learning it from people who are actually not just doing it, but doing it at the level that I want to do it. So I worked for a guy named Robert Greene, who wrote a book called The 48 Laws of Power, and he wrote a book called Mastery, which actually may have been on, some of those books may have been on the list of the players. Yeah. I think he's one of the sort of great nonfiction writers of our time.
Yeah, and like, what was the biggest thing you learned from Robert?
Well, I mean, what I mostly learned was like process, right? Like, this is how a book is made, like from start to finish. I think a lot of people, and it's probably true of sports also, but you know, you watch these things on TV or you see the finished product, and you think that, oh, this is just like sort of inspiration is what creates that, or just like, you know, passion is what makes this, and it's like, actually, no, this is a methodical sort of iterative process to which these things are built, you know, and so, when I hear, you know, coaches talk about following the process, I relate to that as a writer, because it's like, yeah, like a book starts as one index card and, you know, ends up as, you know, 60 or 70,000 words.
Right.
And then you start from scratch, you know, the next day when after you publish it, right? And it's just this like you almost become kind of addicted to the grind of it, or the process of it.
You really start from scratch the next day? You don't give yourself like 2 days to celebrate?
I mean, yeah, this book came out the October 1st, and I'm in the middle of the next one.
Are you really? Oh my gosh, Ryan, jeez.
I'm not quite Saban, you know, like stepping out of celebration dinners to make recruiting calls, but I really like writing. Like to me, publishing is like what happens as the byproduct of the writing.
Right.
And so right. I love doing it. And weirdly, like when Obstacle came out, like it did okay, but it did not like blow the doors off. And it didn't really start landing in sports for probably 8 or 9 months after it came out. And it really didn't start taking off for probably a year. So one of the benefits of, you know, I started Ego is the Enemy almost immediately after Ego came out. So, or after Obstacle came out. So instead of sitting there thinking like, oh, this is so sad, why am I not selling, you know, I'm not getting the respect I deserve, or, you know, any of the sort of destructive thoughts, I was more thinking like, oh, I got to write chapter 3 today.
Right. That's fascinating. And so is your next book, and I want to talk about Stillness is the Key in a second, but is the next one along the same kind of vein? Like, is this become like the path you're continuing down?
Yeah. So I wrote a book called The Daily Stoic a few years ago. That's like one page of Stoic philosophy every day. And so this is the one I'm working on. I have a series that I'll do after this, but I'm doing a book that's like a biography of all of the major Stoics. So it's like sort of bite-sized biographies of all the different characters in Stoicism.
Right. All right. So I want to ask you, so in looking at kind of the path that you've taken, there's definitely like a turn in your career, right? Like where this became the focus. And part of me is like, because I'm in media and we're trained to be skeptical, I'm like, okay, here's someone that's writing about media manipulation or whatever early on. So I'm wondering, hey, maybe this guy just found something he thinks works whether or not how much of it was that and how much of it was, okay, I'm finally doing what I want to be doing.
Yeah. So it's actually funny. So I actually got approached I wrote the first thing I ever published about Stoicism in probably like 2009. And it was online. I wrote it for Tim Ferriss's website. And so I actually got someone reached out and they said, hey, we love this. You want to write a book about Stoic philosophy? And I said, yes. Are you kidding me? This would be amazing. And I remember I went to Robert Greene and I said, you know, Robert, I got this chance to write this book. What do you think? And he's like, I don't think you're ready. You should say no. And he was right. I was not remotely ready to do the book. And so my day job at the time was in marketing. And so I went on and did the marketing stuff for another couple of years. And I ended up writing this book, Trust Me, I'm Lying, that was kind of an expose of the media system and certainly not a flattering portrait of myself either. But I was writing this media book as a sort of a turning point in my career of that, like, I'm writing this book to be done with this sort of phase in my life. And now I want to go back to the thing that I've always written about that I'm really interested in writing about, which is ancient philosophy. It did strike me as funny at the time. And I still get it every once in a while where people are like, sort of like, oh, you're just, you know, doing this to make money. And it's like, I made a lot less money on the obstacle. My advance for The Obstacle is the Way was less than half my advance for Trust Me, I'm Lying. Let's say I was this sort of mercenary media manipulator who will write about anything I can to make money. It strikes me as ridiculous that I would choose Stoicism as the,
there's an easier path.
Quick scene.
Right. What was Robert's, when he says you're not ready, like what was the reason?
I think he just meant like I was 23 years old or something, and I was still his researcher. I think he saw that both sort of professionally and personally, it was too early for me in my sort of journey, and that, you know, more life experiences, more experience writing, just even the timing of it. I mean, that book would have come out, you know, basically in the sort of teeth of the financial crisis,
right.
you know, it just wouldn't, it was just totally right for a bunch of different reasons. If only just the discipline of having to wait, probably. So yeah, it was, I mean, and that's one of the benefits of having a mentor. You know, you can imagine you're an assistant coach and you get an offer to be a head coach. You'll never get a chance like this again. You have to say yes.
Right.
And when the head coach says, no, I don't think you're ready, are they saying it because they're professionally jealous? Are they saying it because they don't want to lose you? Or do they actually care about you and they can see that this is not the right opportunity for you? And I was very lucky that Robert was in a place where he really could see what was best.
Hmm. When did you know you were ready personally to take this on?
When I wrote my first book in 2012, I mean, one of the benefits there was like, I'd done it. So now I knew I could do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I knew I could write a book, and I think I got better as a writer. I think I learned more. I think I learned more about the industry. I'd also, you know, having written a book about a topic where books don't usually sell well and having pulled it off, you know, I was in a better position to succeed as well on Obstacle.
Yeah. So just to inform you and anyone listening, so the Obstacle in the Way was mentioned by a few people, including Brian McClellan, the GM of the Washington Capitals, who were 2 years off a Stanley Cup. So this is a guy that's, you know, reached the highest levels in hockey as a general manager. And I thought was just as interesting was Greg Powers, who basically started a hockey program at Arizona State in the desert and used that book as in saying, look, we're trying to sell hockey in the desert here. And we actually have a lot of advantages that people would say are disadvantages. And that became their theme. Like I loved that.
Oh, that's so cool. And I mean, you know, it's funny, you're writing this book about, you're writing about it and you're mostly sort of trying to draw on your own experiences in history. And you hope that you're right, you know, like obviously as an author, you wouldn't be writing it if you didn't think your argument was correct. But then there's something really special and I think really humbling once it comes out and you hear from people who have gone through things that are, you know, worse than what I've ever gone through or just done things at a level that, you know, I look up at and go, I can't believe you did that. And, yeah. And they're like, oh, I used your book. And you're like, wow, like, you know, okay, it stood up under pretty good pressure, and I'm always like that's always like really cool for me to hear.
Do you have a good story of that? You know, outside, and maybe in sports where someone just blew you away that you never would have guessed would have been impacted by it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the Patriots, sort of what kicked it off in sports is the Patriots on their way to that Super Bowl in 2014, and then I think it's primarily, though, as cool as the sports stuff are, you know, you hear from someone, you're like, hey, you know, like, I just found out I had cancer, or your book got me through having cancer, or it got me through the loss of this or that, or, you know, I was lucky enough, I was in San Diego a couple weeks ago, I spoke to a group of Marines. You know, you realize that there are all these people doing all these really difficult things at different levels. But at the core, what they all share is a sort of a desire to get better, you know, like a desire to sort of compete and improve. And I think that's ultimately why sports, as absurd and, you know, enormous as they are so sort of universal and relatable, is that, you know, elite performance is elite performance is elite performance. And to me, that's got to be why, you know, 2000, you know, your old philosophy is resonating. Although actually, you know, I just did think of a good example. One of the people I heard from on Obstacle was Ryan Shazier, the player on the Pittsburgh Steelers who got hit and was more or less paralyzed. And he sort of inched his way back up to standing and walking and jogging. And, you know, who knows? I think his dream is to maybe play one day again. But even the fact that he is now a mobile human being is just like an incredible triumph of the human spirit. And, you know, you hear, oh, hey, I read your book and, it, you know, someone gave it to me in the hospital. And you're just like, that could not have been that could not have been more of a fanciful idea to me as I was writing that, you know, in my apartment in 2013, that this was the kind of conversation I'd be having about it.
That's pretty amazing. I love that. So Stillness Is the Key is your most recent, which I've read, and it was great. And Bob McKenzie, who on our list, he's a big hockey insider at TSN in Canada, recommended it and recommended it blind on the list, which I loved. He's like, look, all these other books by Ryan Holiday are great. This one's going to be great, which I loved. And I wanted to ask you, what I like about these books is there's stories that show these examples, right? And in this one, there was the Sean Green story. And I wanted to get who kind of broke through a slump using some of these philosophies. How do you identify which stories to put in? And specifically to this one, how did you find the Sean Green story? How did that come across your plate?
Yeah, so somebody at the Texas Rangers, Josh Boyd, actually recommended Sean Green's book to me. He wrote a book called The Way of Baseball. Mm-hmm. And actually Josh is also who told me about Sadaharu Oh, this sort of very amazing but completely unknown home run hitter from Japan, maybe the greatest home run hitter in the history of baseball, although he never played in the major leagues here. So I was just reading those books as someone who likes to read and someone who likes sports, but I kind of always have my eye open towards stories and so I was just fascinated by Sean Green's ability to sort of quiet that voice in his head. And the paradox of slumps is like precisely when you're doing worse, that's when the mind sort of turns against you and makes an already really difficult thing even harder. And so that story just struck me and I sort of, tucked it away. And as I sat down to write about Stillness, they sort of come flooding back to you, and I go to my notes and I sort of pull it together. And that was one of the chapters actually that I sort of built the whole book around. It was actually the story that I used in the proposal that I sold the book.
Oh, no kidding. So you mentioned, I think I read it where you talk about your notes in pretty in terms of process, the note card system. Is that the payoff when you have a process where you're reading something, you're putting a note in a note card and storing it, or is that still
totally
a process?
Yeah. No, that's what I love. And actually, I remember I still have it somewhere. The card where I wrote, about the obstacle is the way. That first, it's like I remember when that was one note card, right? And then it became two and then eight and 30 and then it filled up a box and then it was like, okay, I'm ready to start writing. And so the accumulation of ideas and you're reading a book and you're taking notes and then you're transferring the material and then you're looking at the material again and it's this and then you're referencing back to it when you're writing and it's this sort of constant, maybe it's like for a coach, it's like you're watching film and talking to players and watching film and talking to players and then you're in the shower and the idea for the play comes together or,
right.
Belichick on the, they're on the 5-yard line in that Super Bowl and the play they'd practiced, over and over again, suddenly it's like, this is the moment that this works everything happens.
Let me just pause this conversation with Ryan for a minute to share with you a great deal from a great company. If you're like me at all, sometimes you get so distracted with work or working late or going to sporting events or going to kids' events or taking your kids to hockey or violin lessons or all the crazy stuff that take up the day of somebody who's juggling a family or juggling a job that takes a lot of hours. And you forget to eat, literally, there's days I'll go hours and I'm like, oh, I haven't eaten breakfast or lunch. And DoorDash is here to fix that. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. And ordering is super easy. You open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only is your favorite pizza joint already on DoorDash, but there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities. So I don't know where you live, but I feel like your percentages are really good of having DoorDash have a great restaurant where it is you live. And you might find a new favorite restaurant too by looking at their selections. So right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code FULL60. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code FULL60. So don't forget to save $5 download the app, put in the promo code FULL60, and you save $5 off your first order from DoorDash. All right, now back to that conversation with Ryan.
So hockey players, I'm sure all athletes and coaches are this way, are so process-oriented to the point where they really try to train themselves not even to look at the result, right? Like it's so much about the process. How much of that is kind of in line with your philosophy?
I mean, in a way, I'm almost jealous for sports too, because like there is a clear, it's funny, they're so so process focused, but then they're like one of the few areas in life that there actually is black and white results, you know? As like writers, like what is success? Is it how many views an article gets? Is it how many sales you get? Is it the bestseller list? Is it winning an award? You know, like what is it, right? And so it's funny that sports, it's like one of the few black and white domains left in the world, and they're like, well, I'm just going to focus on results. But I think you have to be, because like, look, like even in a great season, you lose like a lot. Like the winningest coaches almost always lost the most games as well, right? Because like what makes them the best is that they've just done it for so long. And so you do have to just sort of, you realize like there are games where you do everything right and you win. There are games where you do everything wrong and you win. And the reverse is true too. So you have to instead focus on like, did you do all the things you were supposed to do? And I think as a writer, it's the same thing. Like one of my books that I'm most proud of is sold the least amount of copies, but
which is that?
I almost want to cling to that. I wrote this book called Conspiracy, which is about Peter Thiel's sort of war to destroy Gawker. To me, that was the hardest book that I wrote. I think it's my best writing. I think it's, you know, the least predictable of my books, and it's done well. I mean, it's not a failure by any means, but it's like it didn't sell as well as the one that came before or the one that came after. But I almost want to like cherish that feeling that like I know that it's my best, because I feel like there's something pure in that and more process focused.
That one seems like it's more original reporting than any of the other books you did. Is that fair
to say? It's the first one I really had to interview people. I mean, I had to read like thousands of pages of legal documents. Yeah, it was not an easy book by any means.
Right. So to you, what constitutes success? I think that's an interesting question.
Yeah, and you know, I just sort of went through this with Stillness, right? Like, so it came out the first weekend, you would be insane. I don't think it's possible to be 100% detached from results, right? Like, you have to care. If you're totally detached, like, why would you even do it, right?
Right.
But let's say with my first book, you know, it was like, I was 10%. Folk happy with the process, 90% looking to the results. I would hope that I've gotten closer to flipping that ratio. And so, you know, like going into like the day before it came out, I'd like to think I'd taken 90% of the gains off the table, or I'd banked them already. And then, you know, it ended up, you know, it sold the most of my books, and it ended up debuting at number one on the New York Times list. But I tried to get to a place where that was like, oh, cool. Where are we going for dinner? You know, like, and so it certainly mattered, and I'm certainly going to frame it and put it on my wall. But I am trying to inch my way towards mostly being proud of what I know I was able to do, not what some external person said I did.
Right. Does already having the success you have maybe allow that more than 10 years ago? You know what I'm saying? Like you can already be like,
I'd like to think that like if the confidence you have isn't based on evidence, like what's it based on?
Right.
You know, I would hope that the success has allowed me to feel a bit more secure. But I think there's certainly people who have had extraordinary amounts of success, but still, you know, you could knock them over with a feather because they're so sort of, you know, and Marcus Aurelius talks about this in Meditations. He says, you know, like insanity is tying your success to what other people say or do. You know, it's tying it to like it's deciding that success is something that someone other than you controls. And that's great, provided the world is operating fairly, you know. But, you know, I put out eight other books before this one that sold enough copies to hit the Times list, and they weren't there. And then we don't know why they weren't there, right? And maybe it was a glitch, maybe it was deliberate, but, like, it wasn't there. So, like, one of the reasons that I want to get to a place where my success is not determined by that is because I know what it feels like when it is.
Mm-hmm. Marcus Aurelius didn't have to deal with Twitter, so I feel like I have an initial obstacle to deal with.
No, of course. I mean, I cannot imagine like what they would think of these horrendous things. It's insane. It's insane. We give people we don't like access, you know, directly to our brain. Mm-hmm. And just the amount of people that, you know, I know, they wake up, and whether they're going to have a good day or not depends on whether, you know, Donald Trump tweeted something at 3 a.m.
Right. So that's one of the concepts you hit on in Stillness is the key is don't, you know, don't wake right up and, you know, find a routine that's not that. And I think, again, tying it to athletics, I think building a routine, like I think athletes, we just ran a story about Sidney Crosby, the Penguins captain, who's the most, you could say superstitious, he would say it's routine based, does everything exactly the same. Like how much have you found that to be part of the success of kind of high achievers?
Yeah, Westbrook's a total nut about routine. I think they asked Nadal about his routine, and he's like, if it was superstition, why would I do it even when I lose, right? So it's definitely routine. I think it's about realizing that, like, you want to eliminate things that you even have to think about or worry about, right?
Yeah.
And that allows you to sort of lock in on the process. It allows you to lock into what's in front of you. And you know, it is weird. You know, Mitch Trubisky just got in a bunch of trouble for saying they should turn off the TV in, like, the Bears locker room. But he's totally right. Like, why are you watching TV? None of these people know what they're talking about. Like, of any kind. Like, I was in a senator's office a couple months ago. And he's like watching Fox News, and it's like, this isn't good for anyone.
Right.
Why are you doing this? But we feel obligated.
Yeah. And then last concept I wanted to hit on with you in this book is entering relationships, because I think teams are so team oriented. And when I talk to coaches, I just had this conversation this morning with a coach, a Hall of Fame guy, who said, you know, the best teams he had and the biggest challenge as a coach is taking, you know, a group of players, turning it into a family, and then letting them kind of turn loose themselves. And they end up coaching themselves because of those relationships. And I thought that was an interesting, if not like odd thing to tie into something about stillness, right? Like, what is that relationship between building relationships and kind of having that stillness and that discipline?
Well, it's weird, because we think, you know, when you think of a monk or you think of a priest or you think of Buddha or these, you know, the Dalai Lama, I don't think is married, right? Like, we tend to think of the really still people being sort of disconnected. And I don't know, to me that seems very sad, and maybe it seems like the wrong way to go about it. I mean, to me it's like, as an ambitious person, as a driven person, as a person who's got things that are stressing me out or, you know, falling in my lap all the time, it's actually having someone that you come home to or that you connect with, or the idea of doing this as an island seems, you know, insane to me. And so, yeah, in the book, I'm talking a little bit less about teammate relationships and more about sort of like personal relationships. But it is interesting, sort of generationally, just the amount of people that I know that are just kind of adrift, right? Like, they don't live anywhere. They're like, their relationships are like whoever they recently met on some dating app.
right.
You know, they don't work. They work wherever they want to work. You know, there's this, like, it just feels, on the one hand, it might feel nice because there's some control that you have over it, but it strikes me as sort of empty and lonely and ultimately sort of sad. And so I think rooting oneself in connections to other people is not just like a performance strategy, but it's sort of the only real reason we're here. When I talk to the Browns and the Rams, and actually when I talked to the NFL owners meeting this year, I ended with this photo which you can look up is incredible. But after that, you know, crushing loss in the NFC Championship game last year, off that sort of blown call, there's a photo of Drew Brees in the stadium after, in the Superdome after the game. Like, you know, everyone leaves, and then kind of like the players come out and meet, like, you know, whoever was waiting, you know, whoever friends and family are waiting, or they see their kids, you know, after they shower. You've probably witnessed that scene like 100 times.
Yeah.
But he's playing football with his kids on the field of the Superdome, the exact field where his heart was just broken and the season of his life was just taken from him. And in this photo, I think Diana Rossini took the photo, but he's tying his son's shoe. Like, he's sitting down and tying his son's shoe, and nobody, you know, he's not doing it for the cameras. He doesn't know, but it's like, man, like, I can't, like, he came back to the present, like, to real life so quick that it just, you know, I mean, it's amazing. And I'd like to think that serves him well, winning or losing. And to me, that's kind of what you need.
Mm. Do you find that comes naturally? I realized that, and I had to be like intentional about it. I was like, I haven't met a new friend since the kid I met in kindergarten. Like, my friends are like 40-year-old friendships. And I'm like, I have to surround myself with people and be very intentional about it.
Yes. It's just really easy to, yeah, these tools make it easier to not interact with people. And so I think as a writer, you kind of naturally have some introversion. And so it can be exacerbated there. You're like, I'm talking to people, and it's like, you're G-chatting with people, and that's not quite the same thing.
Right. Yeah. On Slack all day doesn't mean you have any meaningful relationships.
Yeah. And how many of the relationships you have are with people who share the same profession, or, you know, like, how often are you dealing with like regular people who don't care about what you do?
Like, those are the people that are best, because it's less stressful, because you're not talking about work, or you're not talking, like, I...
Totally.
Like, those are people, and, like, my wife, thankfully, like, she's not into hockey, she's not into writing, like, she's barely has written anything, read anything I've ever written.
Totally.
And it's awesome. Like, I love that.
No, people go like, oh, is your wife a writer? And it's like, I don't know how there would possibly be room for two of me in a relationship. It would be terrible.
Right. That's great. All right. Well, I'll wrap it with the question that led to all this. What is the best book you've read in the last year? That's the question I was asking everybody, and it became this project, and now here we are. So what's your version of that? What's your best book in the last year?
Yeah, there's been a ton of books. I'll give one that I think people would definitely like. And I'm sure this is on your list a lot. I thought David Epstein's book Range was a spectacular book. I think it's a parenting book in disguise, and it's just one of the best things I've read in quite some time.
Do you have kids?
I do. Yeah.
So what did you find like applicable as a parent in that book?
Well, I mean, for like, your impulse is to do exactly what he said. It's like, oh, you got to start him really early on. You know, it's like, you got to do the Tiger Woods thing. My oldest is only three, so I'm a little bit early on this.
Yeah.
But just realizing, like, oh, actually, like, the job of a parent is to give your kid a broad swath of skills and a framework or a base of competence from which, once they reach sort of adulthood or sort of some level of, you know, peak skill, or sorry, peak performance, they can then decide to go all in on something, right? Mm-hmm. That you don't have to make that decision for them at 3 years old. And in fact, it's probably like the worst time you can make that decision. So right. One of the big things I took from that is just like, you could just take a deep breath and relax a little bit.
Right. Right. Well, awesome. Well, Ryan, I know you got a lot going on. You just came back from a big trip, so I really appreciate the time, man.
No, thanks, man. Thanks so much for reaching out, and we'll be in touch.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Cool.
Take care.
All right. Talk soon. Bye.
I want to thank Ryan for joining the podcast. I would encourage you, if any of this conversation struck a nerve with you or really piqued your interest, go to ryanholiday.net. Check out his books. He's a frequent blogger on there. You can sign up for an email from him. All that, all that good stuff where you can really tap into his philosophy, his writing. He's out there to try to help people. And if this is something you think you'd benefit from, I would definitely encourage you to check that out. I'm also in my hand, I'm holding a copy of his most recent book, Stillness is the Key. That is now available everywhere. I read it. I loved it. It's great. I am excited to go back now through his library and check out some of his books that he's written previously. Complete aside, speaking of his library, then we didn't get into this, but he's a massive reader, and if you follow him on Instagram, he'll post pictures of his library. He's cultivating an incredible book collection. I love that. So a lot of fun to do. Thanks again, Ryan. Thanks again to Ryan's team for coordinating this. He's a guy with a lot going on. So we there was a lot of negotiation back and forth, and we were able to pull it off. So a huge thanks to everybody on Ryan's side and to producer Tyler for setting that up. Before we wrap up, I want to give a sincere thank you to everybody who has given a review on Apple Podcasts. I know everybody like says this on their podcasts or whatever, and you're supposed to pump reviews, but like I just noticed that we crossed over 500 reviews on Apple Podcasts, 5 stars. That's incredible to me. You're taking time to do something that really helps me and helps grow the podcast, and it's invaluable, and it keeps this thing going. It allows us to get bigger guests. It allows us to even expand, like today's podcast with Ryan Holiday. Like if this doesn't have an audience, if this isn't something that is, you know, prominently placed in where people can get their podcasts with positive reviews, people like that aren't going to want to do it. And every time somebody leaves a review, it helps grow this audience, helps make the guests better, and makes it more entertaining for you. So I want to sincerely thank everybody that has given a review to kind of cross that threshold. And if you haven't, and if you like this podcast, I would really encourage you to do so. It helps me out in a big way. And I want to highlight a review that came last week. I like this because I think it captures things. I appreciate it. It comes from Mark Scott Biz, who says, it was a 5-star review, who says, Craig is awesome. He listens so well and doesn't try to dominate. I love it. I think, I don't know if that's backhanded for thank you for not talking, but I want this podcast to be a platform for people who are interesting and smart that you guys want to connect with. Give them an opportunity to do so without me getting in the way. Which I do occasionally, but I do try to stay out of the way of the guests and let them share their insight. Like this isn't about me. This is about them. And so, I really appreciated that from Mark. So thanks for doing that. And thank you for listening. Oh, one last thing. We uploaded the John Chaika podcast from the archives onto the Athletic app for any subscribers who want to give that one a listen. That's from a couple years ago, but it's still a great listen. And we did it because John just signed a contract extension with the Coyotes, a team that is off to a nice start. And we thought it was timely to kind of get into his philosophy. So if you're a Coyotes fan, or you're just interested in somebody who is the youngest GM ever to take over a team and is now seeing the fruits of his labor, you can get his backstory on that one. So make sure you download the Athletic app for subscribers who want to go listen to that. All the other ones, all the current episodes are free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere else you get your podcasts. All right, that's it. Thanks again to Ryan for joining the podcast. Thank you for listening, and have a great week.